Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. I'm very hopeful that all of you who are listening today have become totally addicted to tuning into this very educational show. If you're a dog lover who owns one or more dogs, or if you just like to learn more about what makes our dogs tick, this is the place to be every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on WNJC 1360 AM. Our programs every week focus on providing important information about dog behavior and training, canine health issues, diet and nutrition, information about specific breeds, and we also talk about the special needs of shelter and rescue dogs. If you haven't been able to listen to the entire program, please know that you can always go to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, and listen to the podcasts that are linked on the page marked Rini's Radio Show. Those podcasts are usually up on my website by Friday of every week. You can actually right-click the link to save it directly to your own computer if you'd like to do that. My guest today is Hannah Lori Orkus, an obedience trainer and behavior consultant from Southlake, Texas, with 35 years of experience. She's an instructor at the Pause Agility Working School near Fort Worth, Texas, and at the Woodland Springs Animal Hospital in Keller, Texas. Hannah Lori loves working with animals, including horses, and she enjoys teaching humans how to train their dogs using only positive-based methods. Before we talk to Hannah Lori, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Hannah Lori. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today in the Doghouse. You have 35 years of experience working with animals. I can't imagine how many animals you must have worked with in all those years. Must have been many, many, many.
Yes, quite a few.
Good. What motivated you to become a dog trainer?
What piqued my interest, I used to show horses. We had dogs on the farm, and then we got our first herding breed, a Border Collie Aussie mix, and started chasing the cattle. My dad said, I need to train the dog. I took my first obedience class, and then it was traditional methods in the late 60s. My behavioral interest grew how much training a dog was to training a horse.
Oh, really?
Yes. Then when they went to positive methods, and I learned how they trained in marine mammals in the early 90s. I just took the next step further and even got more engrossed in behaviors.
Yeah. I think all of us who work with dogs and other animals had somebody or something spark an interest in us, and it's just the most wonderful thing I know I've ever done. Do you think that people misunderstand their dogs because they expect them to behave like humans?
Yes, I think sometimes it comes with a misunderstanding we have of expectations, especially on our dogs. Think about it. We expect more from our family dog than any other animal on earth. We wouldn't have the same expectations on the family cat, the horse, cow, chicken, a goat, a bird, or a fish, but we have those expectations on a dog.
Mm-hmm.
When a dog jumps up, gets excited, when he greets in appropriate places, digs, barks, he's just displaying natural dog behaviors. He's acting like a dog because he is a dog.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean he's a bad dog. If we want him to have what we humans call appropriate behaviors like sit, come when called, off, we need to teach him those behaviors. many of the behaviors we want from our dogs are really unnatural for them, which can be real confusing for our dogs when we don't want them to act like a dog at all. Mm-hmm. Can you just imagine what our dogs would teach us if the tables were turned?
Well, even their people's children. I don't think that people have such high expectations of their children as they do the dogs either.
No, they don't. I almost said that, and I kept my I kept that out on purpose. I agree with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tell it like it is here. I don't whitewash anything because I see all these problems happening every day, and it's very troublesome for the whole family. If they get a dog and they can't get the dog to behave and they keep spinning their wheels for nothing, doing trying the same things and nothing's working, the one who really loses out is the animal. And so that's really important that people do understand that.
It is. And all these same principles in this dog behavior with positive reinforcement and learning theory apply to children as well.
Absolutely. And I think that many of the teachers that I meet today agree with that because they see the results of it. You know, it's just science-based information. It's
yes.
Psychology. What sort of problems come up in the homes because of this misunderstanding? What do you see out there?
I see a lot of frustration, both on the human and the dog. And just with a little bit of behavioral knowledge, the humans gain an understanding. I try to put it in human terms so they can understand what it feels like to be a dog, to be frustrated. Have you ever played the game of charades?
Absolutely.
But it can be a tough game. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to guess what the human is trying to get us to say the words. Well, just think if the rules were changed and we changed the species that was giving the clues, it would even make it a harder game.
Mm.
And then think if you were getting hurt, if you guessed wrong, would you want to continue to play?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. It's real difficult. And just think that is just an example of just a day in the life of a dog.
Right.
And talk about being misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
It is very tough. And I do explain to my clients that we are speaking different languages, and it really behooves us to learn their language. We have to learn what they're saying and what they're trying to tell us. What are their emotions at any given time? Do most people have no idea what their dogs are feeling?
Right.
And that's all part of my program, too, as I'm sure it is yours. If these misunderstandings continue on and on, day after day, what are the situations? What do you see out there? What happens when the human becomes so frustrated with the dog?
Unfortunately, that's when they start thinking about giving up the dog. When we see dogs, puppies, actually release endorphins. And then when the puppy gets adolescence, we don't get those endorphins feeling anymore, and more people get rid of the dog.
Right.
And it's behavioral problems. Unfortunately, the statistics I've read some time ago, they were a guesstimate on statistics. 9 out of 10 dogs don't make it to a year old. If
wow.
anybody takes an obedience class, those actually change to 9 out of 10 the dog will make it through its life.
Oh, I can't agree with that more. That's scary. 9 out of 10 don't make it to
a year old
when they don't have any training.
Right. It's usually the misunderstanding because it's the human that gets the understanding in a good obedience class.
Let me ask you a question. When you talk to somebody who has a dog and they've called you for help, but then they say to you, I've trained my dog. My dog is very well trained. He knows how to sit. He knows how to lie down, but I'm just not getting through to him. What do you say to people like that? What could be going wrong? Do you have any clues?
Again, it's usually a misunderstanding. I usually have them bring the dog to me or a private lesson if it's something major going on.
Mm-hmm.
That they have taken an obedience class or have taught the dog things, that is a big plus, and I commend them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can jump going forward usually faster.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just try to fine-tune any kind of behavioral modification that they need for the dog for whatever issue it is that they have.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have learned that step or understood their dog in that behavior.
So those people who haven't trained their dogs, we're going back to that just for a moment, and they're frustrated and they're thinking about giving up their dogs. What happens with the dog during this time that everybody is getting so frustrated? The humans are frustrated, the dog is frustrated. What sort of behaviors do you see out there with a very frustrated dog who knows nothing?
Usually they're frustrated, they don't have things to do, and it's amazing when you show the human just a little bit about behaviors and can get him to do just a brief sit or a brief looking at the human or of interest, all of a sudden a light bulb goes off in the human, it seems, and they go, oh, my dog is smart after all,
right.
Or he can do this. oh, isn't that fascinating? They don't realize the dog could do it all along. Mm-hmm. We just gave them the bridge of communication mm-hmm. so the two can understand. And a lot of times the dog will look at the human and say, oh, thank you for figuring it out, mm-hmm. or nudge me on the side and say, oh, thanks for letting them get it. It's just the cutest thing. It's mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. And I love to see people looking at their dog and realizing just how intelligent they are. I respect dogs enormously, and probably other animals are just as smart, but it's just obvious how clever they are, not only in learning the good behaviors that we try to teach them, but in figuring out, even when during this period of frustration, and this is what gets them into trouble, is that they're trying desperately to figure out how to survive in their environment, and they're trying to figure it out based on their own dog instincts, and that's what people get. They get a lot of animal behavior that is inappropriate because the dog is just using his own instincts. But they can try to make their life work for them in the only way they know how to do that. And so they can survive, just becomes extremely problematic.
Right. And we've made it more difficult on the dog by confining them. They don't have as much interactions with other dogs. They don't have the opportunity to go out and seek and hunt and find and do and play.
Mm-hmm.
Being more confined, a lot of times the behavioral issues will escalate just because their needs aren't met.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it breaks my heart when I hear somebody telling me that their dog is crated between 8 and 10 hours a day. I think that any dog that does not develop behavior problems has to be super tough, because that's not normal for a dog. They're so social. They need to be out and about and running and doing, and being crated all day is really, I have to just say, it's just really cruel to be crated 8 or 10 hours a day.
Right, but when I highly suggest a doggy daycare.
Yeah, doggy daycare, or just at least once, get the dog out and take him for a walk, let him play, let him get some mental stimulation as well as physical stimulation, you know, so that we don't have all these problems. Hannah Laurie, in your introduction to your own clients, you wrote an article that I saw, which talks about green light, yellow light, and red light learning modes. Can you explain what you mean by these?
Yes, I use this analogy a lot in my private lessons and also in my classes at the very beginning to help people understand what the dog goes through emotionally and behaviorally. And I usually put it in human terms so they can understand it. Green light mode is just like we're sitting here talking, we're nice and relaxed. And that's why they teach children at school with everybody sitting down. They don't teach children at recess. They sit them at their desks. And when they're quiet and calm, they begin teaching. It's just like we're right now sitting, listening to each other. And if miraculously, if I could give you $100 bills, and I said, oh, if you can count these, you can keep them, everybody would automatically start counting these $100 bills. But I would continue talking.
Mm-hmm.
We mentally cannot listen and count at the same time.
Okay.
And that's like a dog, even though he knows how to sit, because he's distracted by whatever in his environment, he can't sit. It doesn't mean he's a bad dog. Mentally, he can't process to sit at the same time while he's whatever, looking at whatever.
Okay.
And that's still in green light mode, even mm-hmm. though he might be calm or we might be calm.
Mm-hmm.
We mentally can't do both. And they've actually done studies on multitasking here recently,
mm-hmm.
even with humans, on what we can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same. But even in green light mode, we have to be calm.
Okay.
I mean, to learn. Let's go to yellow light mode. Let's just say somebody comes up, we're not sure, he might have a gun. All of a sudden, the money in front of us doesn't have as much value. What I have to say right now might not have as much value. Is because, are we safe? It's a hormonal change. Have you ever almost been in a car accident? You know what that felt like?
Yes, horrible.
Right. That's a hormonal change that you had no control over. That keeps you from going, if you need to go to flight or flight mode, even if you're in your car and nothing happened, and even if you don't need to fight or flight, your body still goes through those changes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the same thing a dog does in yellow light mode. And yellow light would be maybe if he went to the vet's office or the first day at class. Or another dog comes along. He doesn't know if he's safe.
Mm-hmm.
He goes through a hormonal change, just like that almost car accident we went through.
Okay.
Now, if you had done that, and you calm yourself, it takes about half an hour to calm yourself down after the almost car accident.
Yes.
Those hormones stay in your system 3 to 5 days later, even if nothing has happened. So even though it takes you about half an hour to settle down from the almost car accident, you can get yourself back worked up if you tell somebody later in the day about the car accident.
Huh.
That's because those hormones are still in your system.
Really?
And that's what happens to a dog in yellow light mode. So let's say you took him to the vet, and even though he was safe and nothing happened, he probably had a hormonal change.
Mm-hmm.
So something later in the day he may react to when he normally doesn't. It's because he still has all those hormones in his system.
I see.
And And that's like the dog at a first day of class. Almost all of them, 99%, always seem to be in yellow light mode. They're nervous. They don't know if they're safe there.
Yeah.
And then it only takes one dog or one human to go into red light mode, which is highly reactive. That's like I would say, oh, my goodness, run for our lives. The person at the door has a gun. Mm-hmm. Well, that's like one dog in a class goes to red light mode, starts barking uncontrollably, puts all the other dogs on higher alert, more hormonal changes. You know, do they need to run? Are they safe? It only takes one to react, or in our case, like if I would have reacted,
mm-hmm.
the other ones to go into red light mode. And you physically, mentally cannot learn anything in red light mode.
Mm-hmm.
If I gave you your favorite dessert during that time running out the door and said, here, eat this, we mentally and physically can't eat it because our stomach has been shut off.
Right.
And that kind of becomes like a trigger or to let you know if your dog, if he's not eating, where he is in the yellow red light mode.
This is
if he's too high, his stomach's already shut up.
Right.
He can't, so you know he's in red light. You can't mentally learn. All we can do is try to award to get the dog back into calm mode
mm-hmm.
to start beginning training, start looking for calming signals for the dog.
Okay.
We can actually, if we get worked up and become nervous because our dog's nervous, can make our dog get even more nervous.
Exactly, sure.
And so what I try to do is I try to explain that to the humans. So then to train in green light mode, we have to have the dogs calm and use caution in yellow light mode, make it a lot easier for the dog and reward heavily for any calm behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in red light, don't even try to teach the dog, but maybe put a barrier around him so mm-hmm. he doesn't see what is bothering him
mm-hmm.
or
just remove him.
Your dog mentally can't learn.
Right.
Just try to stay calm, breathe deeply so the dog can help calm down.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Really? Did you coin these phrases yourself as far as that is concerned?
No, I think actually there's a really good program, Dog Scouts.
Okay.
They have them wear a yellow bandana.
Uh-huh.
For the dogs that are highly reactive, and there's a few other colors they wear depending on their reactivities.
Right.
And I thought, oh, what a great visual for humans to see.
Yeah.
So I think I've borrowed it pieces from here and there.
It's excellent. It's really excellent. You advise people to learn how to read their dogs to see if they're happy, fearful, stressed, or distracted. How do you teach people to read their dogs?
I try to show them as overall. We can nitpick and say if the eyes are up, their ears are up, their carriage. But if you learn the early signs of yellow light mode, and they're actually facial muscles and body postures are the same as us humans. So if we look startled, and there's a startled look on a dog, they're very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And red light, reactive, you know, showing the teeth and all. Most people know reactive dogs.
Right.
When they're barking or lunging or growling.
Mm-hmm.
What I try to teach people is more the yellow light before they come reactive.
Okay.
Some dogs have anywhere from a few seconds to sometimes a few minutes before they get reactive.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we actually want to get them before they ever get in red light mode.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see the early signs of yellow light mode. The muscles in our faces are really kind of cool. Patricia McConnell, in her book, For the Love of a Dog,
yes.
in the middle of the book has pictures of humans smiling and of different dogs smiling.
Yeah, I remember
showing
that.
How similar they are. Then she has them of humans in a worried look, and humans already know how to read that expression.
Right.
And it shows it side by side of a dog with a worried look. And it's really comical. It actually makes a lot of people laugh when they see the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has it reactive where a dog snarling and a person yelling and how similar our facial features look. And even in still pictures that aren't moving, how similar they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how the people understand then how to get a dog overall after seeing a few of those pictures is kind of interesting.
Do you think that dogs can read us, and are they affected by our emotions?
Yes, they can read us, and they very much so. Yes, on both of that.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs spend a great deal of time watching us and studying us for cues as to what we're going to do next. They're masters at it.
Mm-hmm.
They do so 24/7 in their waking hours.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to stay pretty busy during the day with various activities, where a dog's usually entire day is watching and observing us. They know immediately when we're happy or sad, cross or excited or so on.
Mm-hmm.
They're emotionally aware of our emotions and can even mirror it. If we get excited, they can get excited. Or if we kind of frown and slump our shoulders, you'll see a dog's ears somewhat go down.
Mm-hmm.
Studies have shown that they can actually even smell our hormone levels. So not only do they what they see, they can actually smell.
Mm-hmm.
In my first class, I have everybody breathe real deeply, real deep in, and then take about 5 seconds to breathe out. And I have them do that like 3 to 5 times. And it's amazing. Some people get tingly feelings in their shoulders.
Right.
All the dogs in the class settle down and look at their humans or look around or look at the other dogs. Like, what's going on? Something has changed.
Uh-huh.
And within a minute, most of the dogs relax.
That's a really wonderful cool. exercise.
They can smell the hormone levels in other dogs as well, like going to classes, the vet offices.
Right.
Remembers that dogs have been stressed. Even though that they're not stressed right there at given time, the hormone is left behind them.
Wow.
So that automatically puts the dog on alert. The dogs are always learning. They're watching our every move. It's similar to a toddler. So we have to kind of remember school is always in session, mm-hmm. whether we're officially training or not.
This is great. I love your ideas. I think that that's a great exercise to do. I think I'm going to start implementing that myself, and I certainly will give you credit for it when I tell my clients to take deep breathing exercises in class and all. I think that's wonderful.
Oh, it's cool. And most of them think you're kind of silly, but it's amazing how they work. And then afterwards, I tell them to watch the dog. And they're all very impressed. Most of them have to do it the second and the third class.
Okay. All right. We hear a lot today about dogs being dominant. I even have clients tell me that their puppies are trying to be dominant. Do you think our dogs are really trying to dominate us and take over?
Oh, my goodness. like Tara Rodriguez's comment on this. She had a good point. She's been in the dog training longer than I have. She said that everything you've learned about dominance, just forget about it and put it, it only goes to mating. And she also brought up a good point that I didn't think about before that. Dominance actually is fairly new in the dog training world. When she was training dogs before I was, and I've been in it 35 years,
mm-hmm.
dominance wasn't an issue until like the later 70s, 80s, and the 90s,
mm-hmm.
it got really more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about where it came from, it was done with wolves
right.
that were in captivity
mm-hmm.
that didn't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's like if you put us humans, maybe 10 of us, in an elevator that didn't know each other for long periods of time, days and months even, under stress, all behaviors escalate.
Absolutely.
Well, we wouldn't act the same in an elevator after, let alone an hour, a day, or a month, like we would in our family unit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the same thing that happened in wolves. They didn't know each other in captivity, and all the behaviors escalated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even they found out later that wolves in the wild get along in a family unit just like we do as humans. Wolves are not highly aggressive toward each other. It's not in their best interest to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They have to keep their energy towards keeping the peace, survival, safety, and food and reproduction. It wastes too much energy for any of the aggressive behaviors.
Right.
They've blown a hole in the whole dominance business, realizing that dominance reduction training aimed at that is worthless to downright dangerous.
Right.
Professor David Meck, who actually came up with the first study in the wolves,
right.
studying wolves for 40 years, he's denounced his first study that has brought all that to light
mm-hmm.
in the dominance theory. He's denounced it over the last, gosh, probably 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so disappointed that his work won't go away, even though his early work, he's denounced it.
Isn't that something?
Because it was like wolves in captivity. It's just like humans in the elevator.
Right.
We do not get along the same way for long periods of time in an elevator like we do in a family unit.
Right.
Dr. Karen Overall says some interesting things on dominance aggression.
Mm-hmm.
She says, which I really think is more the direction it goes into, is in like an underlining anxiety disorder. What we label as, quote-unquote, I'll just use dominance aggressive dogs, they're anxious about their control over their resources,
mm-hmm.
like food, toys, sleeping, or running off leash, getting on a bed, their anxiety. He's protecting his things because you might say he has anxiety aggression.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to humans with obsessive compulsive disorders
mm-hmm.
or personalities. They're very controlling or micromanaging.
Mm-hmm.
Dominance aggressive dogs are very tense animals. In a true social hierarchy, the dominant animal is always less aggressive than any of the other animals. They do everything to keep the peace. It's kind of like the Colin Powells of the world. He isn't a leader because he fights everybody. He's a leader because he keeps the peace,
mm-hmm.
so to, you know, per
yeah,
se.
Right, right.
And if you take the dominance blinders off, you can see the behaviors as they truly are. Is it resource guarding? Is it anxiety? Is it fearful-based? You know, could it be stress? Furthermore, dogs don't think like wolves because they don't have wolf brains. We humans descended from apes. I think our closest relatives, I think they say, is a chimpanzee. but we don't or behave like them in spite of our common genetic ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if we would have a question regarding children rearing behavior, and we study chimpanzees to look for the answers. That's why we can't look for answers in wolves for dog behaviors.
Okay.
And so the same is true of the dog and its ancestors.
Hmm.
And furthermore, our dog knows we are not a dog. We simply are our dog's guardian. And dogs that you teach with positive reinforcement become playful, intelligent, curious, and very interested in us, so we don't need to dominate them either.
Mm-hmm.
A very good book regarding dominance and takes us a step further, and it's just a little booklet. It's very simple, called Dominance, Fact or Fiction by Barry Eaton. Is very good. It takes us the next step further.
Well, thank you very much for all this information. This is great, and I hope my listeners really listen to this and listen to it more than once because it's important
and
stuff.
And another thing on that is Jean Donaldson, in her book, Oh, Behave,
uh-huh.
has a very good chapter on why we humans can't let that dominant theory out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very interesting. She says it might even go in the human brain. There was an article on the Nature Neuroscience from Duke University
mm-hmm.
found that our brains compulsively seek patterns, whether there are actually patterns or not. We try to consciously be aware of patterns, even though there aren't patterns. And so for the dominance theory, we see the pattern, and therefore we hold on to it. But what's an interesting bit, what is absent from the criteria, that it does not even have to be true for us to find the patterns. So even though it's been denounced, we humans have a hard time letting it go.
Hannah Laurie, you trained a beta fish to
yes.
heal. You said that. We only have about 2 minutes. Can you
okay.
can you describe what that is?
Yes, I took a beta fish. I actually saw Ted Turner in the marine mammal world.
Uh-huh.
And Ken Ramirez, and my neighbors asked me to keep their fish for them, too, a pair. And I thought, well, if they can fish well, train the whales in a tank, what about me with these betta fish? And so I tried, for the first couple of days, just feeding the fish for any movement toward my finger.
Uh-huh.
Once they caught on within 10 days, I had them going back and forth, forward and slow, spin left, spin right, up and down the tank, doing a little swim, flipping water out of the tank. And totally by accident, I was trying them to get to spin two times and quicker on a dime, really tight.
Uh-huh.
Out of frustration, they jumped out and touched my finger.
Really?
So the grand finale, and I rewarded that and marked it, was coming up and touched my finger. So side by side, in different tanks, right next to each other, they would do like not equivalent to a dog novice healing pattern. And the grand finale was touching my finger.
That's amazing. I would have loved to have seen that. You should do a YouTube thing where you show that you're doing that. I'm serious. You should put it on YouTube. That's great.
Yeah,
did you use a clicker?
No, not with the fish. All I did is tap the counter.
Oh, I see. So you did make a sound.
I thought they could maybe hear that vibration.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really great.
It's the same principle.
Hannah Laurie, this has been really fascinating, and I've just loved talking with you. And you obviously know what you're talking about, and you definitely depend on science in order to make decisions how you work with these animals. And it's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and thank you so much for visiting with us. Can you tell our listeners quickly how they can find out more about you, and where can they contact you if they'd like to?
They can contact, I don't have a website, and I still seem to get my name out there somewhat. I never thought about that.
Ah, get a website, girlfriend.
That's what my husband
said. Let's get a website. All right, well, I just want to say thank you again, and you know what, if maybe sometime you can come back and talk and educate us some more
okay,
about
well,
this.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on your show. I enjoyed it.
You have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning into Thursday in the Doghouse today. Please listen again next week when we'll again speak with Dr. Judy Morgan, a local veterinarian from Clayton, New Jersey. Talk to you later.